Patrick, mettila in mezzo Patrick, palla nostra, Suso, tira Alessio, Suso, tira, perché non tiriamo? Ma perché non tiriamo? Gol! Alessio Romagnoli! Il gol del capitano ancora l'ultimo, come Gilardino!
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher. You can find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher, joined once again by Anthony Torgrud.
Hello, it's me, Anthony Torgrud. I'm getting tired of talking about us sucking, but if you want to see me complain about us sucking, you could follow me on Twitter at Torgrud45. And we have Madison with us, also sad of sucking.
Man, you got a case of the Mondays, man. Yeah. You guys can go ahead and follow me on Twitter at Madison_DT.
Yeah, so a week ago we signed off this podcast by saying let's hope that, you know, our season starts against Torino, we get 3 points, and then we get another 3 points at home against Fiorentina, who are like below us and also having a pretty torrid start to the season. Bottom line is we're now in absolute crisis. We're 1 point above the bottom three. We may or may not have a manager for the Genoa game. And everything has just basically gone to shit. I don't really know what else to say other than that. But yeah, I guess we might as well start chronologically with Thursday night against Torino. A game that for the first, I would say, I'll be generous and say the first half, overall we saw positive signs. And then AJ just completely fell apart inside the last 20 minutes.
Well, I didn't fall apart. I mean, I kept it together, but yeah.
No, team you did. Definitely... I think you probably did fall apart a little bit in the last 20 minutes. We all
actually, yeah, I think I did. I went on a fucking tirade on Twitter, I think. So yeah, I take that part back. Yeah, it started off great. Everyone was looking good. In fact, at halftime, I was ordering a Liao jersey. And luckily for me, the Milan website wouldn't load the payment section for some reason, so I'd never got to finish that. And then we obviously lost, so I was like, well, I'm not going to buy this till we win, so I still haven't bought it, but we'll get to that. But yeah, we looked really solid at first. Everyone was happy. You know, Liao was doing great. Teo was looking fantastic, both offensively and defensively. The midfield was working soundly. Benacer was making the right passes. And then all of a sudden we weren't, you know. Hakan got fouled right outside the box. And instead of calling the free kick like it should have been, they returned it. And while we were protesting that, Torino kept playing as they should have. And we chose not to. And so then Belotti ran it back, scored. We complained some more. They ignored VAR. We come to find out later that VAR was not working, which I think is weird because I mentioned last week how the VAR assignment randomly got changed with no explanation to a referee who's always fucked us. And then this happened. So...
Well, actually, they came out afterwards and said that there were some problems with the VAR communication before the game. However, during the game, it was working fine, they said. They said that the referee could talk to the VAR chief.
Oh, okay. Well, that's even worse then. So, hate them. And, yeah, then immediately thereafter, we're still complaining, not really in it. And Belotti runs it back again, does some crazy bicycle kick shit, scores. And so now we're down 2-1 in a matter of 3 minutes after being up since the 19th. So then instead of, you know, trying to retaliate, get something back, we just collapsed. We shut off, and it seemed like in the 80th minute was when we decided, hey, we should probably play this game. And then we turned it back on and just couldn't find the net, and so we lost.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty accurate reflection of what happened. Maddie, I mean, how do you begin to explain a capitulation like that? Is it a case of we conceded a goal that we didn't think was fair, obviously with the foul on Calhanoglu in the build-up, and then we couldn't get our heads straight after Belotti's equaliser, so we conceded pretty quickly again? Or, you know, do you think there's some of Gianpaolo's methods at play, like he made bad substitutions, or what went wrong, basically?
I think it was a mix of everything. I think after Torino's equalizer, we just did not have the heart to continue. The team does not look very unified at the moment. They just are not clicking. There's something going on with them. I don't know if that's Gianpaolo's tactics are not sitting well with the team, or there's something else. I gotta imagine that has to do with the managerial situation, though. But also the substitutions, I think putting Bonaventure in for Liao was not the best choice. I would have taken Çalhanoğlu out or something and put Bonaventure in the midfield, because Liao was the one who was really leading the charge going forward. And when you take that out, the team is not going to really know how to go forward after that, because Piontek is not able to take the ball forward. And we all know Suso, he has not been very good lately. So
in Gianpaolo's defense, though, he did realize that going into Fiorentina game when he took off Piontek instead of Liao.
But absolutely.
Focusing still on Chirino, you're absolutely right. He took off our two best players in Liao and Bennacer, and that just didn't help us at all.
No, you know, not at all.
It made a poor situation worse, and it showed.
I think the general consensus with his substitutions in the second half of that game against Torino is that he basically got them wrong. And as Maddie said, I think Hakan should have come off for Bonaventura. And he should have kept Bennacer and Liao on, because they were the ones providing the energy. They were the only ones who actually looked like they give a shit, really. And he should have brought Rebic on for Piontek, because Piontek, again, absolutely non-existent, really, in the final third. But I did have my suspicions that he brought Liao off for fitness reasons. You know, he was the only one who was really doing any dirty work inside the final third. So could understand if he was perhaps a little bit burnt out after a performance like that. But yeah, it wasn't good, really. I mean, we got the starting 11 that we wanted, so I think that was perhaps a small step in the right direction. And we got the first 30 minutes we wanted. We saw some attacking fluidity. We realised once again that Liao was a good outlet to have. He didn't mind straying out to the left side, and that was where a lot of our opportunities came. Obviously took the lead, but once again, it's the mental fragility of the team that shone through. You know, we went a goal up, and rather than going for the jugular, we literally just sat back and said, we're going to try and win 1-0 again. That might work against Brescia, that might work against Hellas Verona, but that is not going to work against a team that's got quality in the midfield and quality in the final third like Torino do. And ultimately, we paid the price for that. As soon as we conceded that equaliser and the manner that it happened, and then Reina getting sent off, you just felt like it needed a calming presence. We needed to just take the sting out of the game and then rally and go again to try and get the winner. But, you know, in actual fact, that wasn't what happened. Calamitous error at the back. Belotti gets his second, and then that was it. I mean, we had a couple of chances later on. Frank Kessie has to put that on target. And then what else was there? Absolutely gorgeous ball in. Piontek with a header from 6 yards, and he can't direct it anywhere other than straight at Sirigu. It's just so, so fitting of where this team's at the moment that nothing really went in our favour. And that put a lot of pressure on for the game against Fiorentina. I mean, there were talk before the game about it being a must-win already, and it couldn't have been any further from, you know, a game that we looked like winning. It was, quite frankly, an embarrassing performance. Fiorentina, obviously, coached by Vincenzo Montella, played with two wingers up front in Chiesa and Ribery, and tore us a new arse time and time again. Found ourselves 3-0 down after 68 minutes or something like that. The fans quite rightly walked out at that point and protested. I don't know. How do you sum up a game like that, AJ, without being horrendously disrespectful towards the players and the manager?
It was absolutely our worst performance so far. Worse than the Derby defeat by a long shot, in my opinion. In the Derby, at least the players showed a little bit of passion and desire to win. It looked from the onset that they just didn't care about this game. Almost like it was, I don't want to say purposeful, but it was such a bad performance that there's almost no possible way that they just goofed up. Like, there had to be something, you know? Like, You know when something crazy happens in the world and there's a conspiracy theory because of how wild it is? That's almost where my head turns on this. Like, it's just so insanely poor of a performance. It's hard to wrap your head around it. And you know, unfortunately, I was corrected on last week's podcast when I said I thought we were going to get battered, and we absolutely fucking did. It was just the most disgraceful performance from everyone, with the exception of Liao. Once again, the only bright light in a very dark, dark tunnel. But the rest of the team, I don't have a single positive thing to say. By halftime, every single player that was in the starting 11 had passed a ball directly to a Fiorentina player. Every single one of ours. I mean, that's a stat no one should ever have to say. No one is proud to hear, but that's a stat that Milan now has to hold. This is officially the worst start in Milan's history since 1933.
1938, but it really doesn't matter. we've only started a season this badly twice in our entire history, which I find a little bit,
surprising.
That a bit weird. Yeah, in like 120 years, you'd have thought we'd have had one or two. I mean, I probably shouldn't really mention this, but we did have the season when we got relegated. I thought we might have started that season worse. But yeah, things that the positive signs that we saw against Torino, and to be honest, I'll back Gianpaolo when he came out after that game and said that Torino was our best performance of the season.
And we agree.
Yeah, we dictated a decent part of that game against a team that are no mugs. You know, Torino is a place that we find very difficult to go. A lot of teams do. And we showed, like I say, some promising signs. We showed, I guess, some decent passages of play. Yes, we weren't cutting them open at will, but, you know, what can you do? When you're playing against a back, I think they play back three, that is pretty settled and has been for a while we're still working on our attacking rhythms and that kind of stuff. But I think, yeah, there were some positive signs there, but all of that evaporated against Fiorentina. The structure that we saw completely vanished. You know, Leao, yeah, not directing any criticism towards him, again, was the only one who looked like he had the confidence to try and take on a man, and we saw that in his consolation goal later on. But then the players that were being talked about before that Torino game as being our saviours, the likes of Teo Hernandez, Benacer, Rebic, you know, players that think are going to get thrust into the starting lineup and make a huge difference, just didn't happen. I mean, I read through a lot of the player ratings from the major papers like Gazzetta dello Sport and Tutto Sport, Corriere dello Sport, all those. And Benacer got like a 4 at the highest, and some of them gave him a 3.5. So that should, you know, he gave away 2 penalties. It was a clumsy performance from him, and I'm sure that he'll admit that. He's young, he's raw. I guess not everything's going to be an 8 out of 10 from him, but it's just like when you're looking for some positive signs and even stuff like that starts to implode on you. I mean, are either of you wondering now if there's any way back for Gianpaolo already?
It's going to be tough. He is going to have to win every game, in my opinion, up to the Lazio game in order to like work his way back up. Mm. It's really hard coming in as a new coach, especially from a team like Sampdoria, who we finished 10 points above last season, come to a team like AC Milan, where you are automatically expected to produce, and then have the start that he started, and then get back in the good graces of the fans. Because unless we are in the top 4 in January, this is going to be on the fans' mind the entire time. Because, to be honest, if we win the next 4 games, or the next 4 out of 5 games, and we're back up in the top 5 or 6, people are going to remember this, but they aren't going to, it's not going to be like such a big deal, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So you say that, but if we look at last season, we thought that as well, and then we finished 1 point outside of our goal, and then it was like, oh, if we only got this point. So I think this is going to haunt us. I really do. And I'm not saying our season's over because of this, but I think at the end of the season, we're really going to be missing out on these points that we lost here.
No, but in order for him to get in the good graces of the fans, though, Champions League, this may haunt us in the Champions League race. And at the end of the season, that's going to pretty much probably determine if he stays on as coach or not, because we need Champions League. And this seemed like the season that management was really pushing, like, gung-ho go for everything. And I feel like they're still doing that because they're talking about all the investment that they want to make in January. But I think in order to get into the fans' good graces, next 4 out of 5, Champions League, that's a whole nother discussion, though.
I think actions speak louder than words. You know, you're right. The management has continually talked about the investment they want to make and how this was the season, you know, where we voluntarily stepped out of Europa League so we could focus on the league and get to where we need to be. We're going to do everything we can. And then we signed bench players. We signed Liao and Benacer and Teo as our only real improvements, and they didn't even start playing until last week. You know, like when you're leaving your friend's house and you walk out and you're going to shut the door and then you stick your head back in to say goodbye. That's how far out the door Jim Paolo is right now. There's not a chance in hell he makes it to the end of the season. I think his time's up. You know, I'm calling for his head, give him the guillotine right now. It's over for me. You know, I don't turn on coaches this fast, but here we are. So first for everything, and I'm done with it.
Yeah, I'm surprised to hear that come out of your mouth, Anthony. Normally you don't just give up like that after four games. How many are we in? Six now?
Six, yeah.
But I'm kind of on the same board. I hate seeing managers leave so fast after just starting a position. I think that it's unfair to them. But dude, you lost the last three games in four out of the first six. Like, that's not okay.
Yeah.
And it's not even just the score lines, you know, because you could lose gracefully. Like in the Torino game, I thought we played well until we didn't, you know. But this Fiorentina game, the Derby. I mean, all the shit that we've done, even the wins were god awful performances. I mean, at least with Gattuso, when we were shitting housing things, you could see the excitement in the players, you know, that they wanted to be there. It doesn't seem like they care. And, in the chat, we were talking about the quotes from Quagliarella earlier this season when he mentioned how he only talked to Jim Paolo 3 to 4 times the season. And that makes sense for an older player. You know, he knows what he's good at. He can get away with that stuff. But we don't have older players. We have young guys that need guidance. They need a father figure. You know, they're young. They need help. And
well, they need an idea. They need an idea and a vision and a philosophy to buy into. And this is why regardless of where you were on the spectrum of happiness whenever Gianpaolo was appointed, my positivity surrounding it was purely, we know what Gianpaolo is. We know what he's going to bring. You know, his system, his 4-3-1-2, is black and white. You know exactly what you're getting with it. And with young players, you know, we bought players that supposedly fit that system. With young players like that, they need to feel like they're buying into something. So what does he do when things aren't working after 2-3 games? Instantly scraps his philosophy, moves us back to a 4-3-2-1 against Genoa, then Brescia, sorry. Then moves us to a 4-3-3, and he's basically lost faith in his own. I don't know. It feels like he's lost faith in his own vision. Yeah,
almost immediately. I mean, like you said, we bought the players for this 4-3-1-2, and now we have our second striker Liao playing as a left wing. He might take over Piontek's spot next week. I mean, we have our right wing playing as Trey Quartista when he should. I mean, it's a fucking mess right now. And we've got six games, like you said, but yet we've used four or five different formations. We haven't had the same lineup in a single game yet this season. I mean, we're all over the place. And we're not going to have the same lineup next week either because we got another red card. We have the most red cards in the season already at 3. Most yellow cards in the season already at 18. The lowest shots on goal. The lowest goals scored. I mean, we've got every bad record in the book right now. This is asinine, at least with Gattuso, even though the complaint was he didn't have a vision, it wasn't clear-cut, at least it seemed like they did. At least we were scoring goals even in defeat, you know? I'm getting worked up right now. I'm getting really fired.
No, I feel it. I do feel like we're all kind of on that same page because we've obviously put up with mediocre starts to the season in the past few campaigns, but this feels like something completely different. I mean, when Fiorentina were walking in that second and third goal last night, I just found myself thinking, what in the name of hell is going on? Like, there's no way that he can possibly walk out of San Siro still with a job. That was what I felt at the time during the game. I'm hearing a lot of fans from other clubs say, well, this is the mistake that Milan keep making. They keep, you know, firing coaches who haven't been given enough time to do what they want to do and stuff like that. We're talking about a historically bad start to the season here. You know, managers do get sacked for this kind of start to a season, especially one within a fan base as expectant as ours, which sometimes is, as we've said many times on here, is over expectant. They do expect too much. I think if people looked at our start to the season fixture list wise and were saying, oh, first six games of the season, we should be looking at taking 16 points, you're expecting too much. There was always going to be a transitional period where we didn't see the ideas on the pitch for 90 minutes. And perhaps, yeah, there was going to be a period of integration with the new signings as well, but we're beyond that now. You know, this for me isn't a wasted six games in terms of the results that we've got and the fact that we haven't seen any progress. He wasted pre-season as well. He basically had the whole pre-season to get his philosophy nailed down, and he persisted with Suso playing as a trequartista, and now here we are, none the wiser as to where everybody's best position is, still starting, you know, Çalhanoğlu in the midfield and still starting Musacho at centre-back, who's had one good performance in the last few months. And I don't know, it just feels like we're taking steps backwards rather than forwards. And all that's going to do is mentally damage a squad that is young and really could do without that, you know?
Yeah, they're young and impressionable. And like you said in preseason, you know, he had all that time to implement his ideals. Yet we lost every single game in preseason and everyone said, it's preseason, it doesn't matter. And I agree. I agree with that wholeheartedly. That's when you grow. But then when we had that god-awful 0-0 draw to Cesena, the final game before the season started, and everyone's like, okay, that was really bad. You know, we need to get this together. Like, we don't have any time now. And then we shit the bed against Udinese in our opener, and then we changed the formation. You know, it's like, so all that time we just dedicated in preseason that wasn't working, but we were growing and developing in it, we just threw it out the window, and every week's been a different type of panic now. It's just, it's frustrating, man. And, you know, you mentioned that fans are saying that that's our problem, is that we're firing coaches too soon. Let's take a look at them. How long was Allegri here? You know, 3.5 seasons, maybe 4.5. I don't really know, but around that time frame, right? That's plenty of time. Then Seedorf took over. He was a caretaker manager. A lot would say he should have continued, and I agree with that, but he was a caretaker. He was not a permanent manager. And then Inzaghi came up. He had a full season and finished 10th. There's no reason to continue with that. And then we hired Mihajlovic, and he was fired wrongfully. I completely agree with that one. Brocchi was a caretaker, so that's fine. And then who came after that? Montella had over a season. Gattuso had a season and a half. I mean, I don't think we're sacking managers too soon.
Couldn't you argue, though, that, you know, the last name that you mentioned there, Gattuso, was the one who got us the closest and got the most out of the tools at his disposal, and absolutely, therefore we were completely...
But we didn't,
you know,
sack Gattuso. He stepped down.
No, but he was pushed.
Yeah, it was.
He admitted that himself. I mean, he was asked about why, you know, he decided to basically terminate his own contract. That was because he didn't want the club to have to pay him off. He said he didn't want the club to feel like they owed him anything. And now, you know, they're talking about
like
him taking the
fired, and they say, you want to resign instead, you know, so you can save a little face. It's like one of those things.
Yeah.
Which he did because he's a very, very honest guy who loves the club. And of course, here we are. Sometimes things do come full circle. He's one of the guys who's been rumored as a possible replacement for Gianpaolo again, which I don't think he would do it personally. I'm thinking of the idea in my head, and I just don't see a circumstance where if we sat Gianpaolo, Gattuso comes back.
Even if he comes back and is successful, that's such an embarrassment for this management. It's, how do you do that, you know? How do you sack a manager and then six games in with the new one, say, we made a mistake and go back? Who was the team that fucking had 15 managers in one season? And
oh, Palermo, when they hired and sacked the same
guy like six times.
Yeah, and they did it with two different guys. I'm sure they basically alternated coaches like for like four consecutive months. Not good.
That's not us. We can't be doing that type of thing. I mean, you look at the list of available managers, and while there are some great ones, it's still slim pickings because of the position we're in. Mourinho is not going to take this type of project. You look at when he took over at United, and it was a similar position, but United was still a lot more favorable job at the time. You know, they were newly into their decline, whereas we had been steady into it.
You could promise an investment as well.
Exactly. You look at Spalletti, who today said, you know, you get more calluses on your hand, but try picking grapes, it'd be more fun, or something to that nature. talking shit about us already. You look at Allegri, he wants $10 million a season. And that's really the only thing we could do. I mean, you and I discussed it in the chat earlier that you give him some sort of deal, maybe offer him a little less now, and if he accomplishes a goal, get your $10 million well-deserved. But we can't go backwards. We can't keep doing that. We can't keep signing players that – I'm sorry, managers that used to be players with little to no experience. That's not going to work. We've seen that tarnish three legends' reputations with us already. I mean, are we going to destroy every icon this club's ever had? No, we can't be doing this.
No, we can't. You're right. I think all you have to do really for me is look over to the other half of the city and you look at what Antonio Conte has done with Inter since he's come in. They're paying him a top salary. He's the highest paid manager in Serie A, but they know that he's going to come in and do really good things for them. The signings that they made, you know, Lukaku, Alexis Sanchez, you know, obviously Sanchez is alone, but they spent big money on Romelu Lukaku, and him and Sanchez were players that arrived having not had the most favourable season at United, but he took a risk on them, and, you know, they've come in, and you look at what he's done with Sensi, and you look at what he's done with even players like Asamoah at wing back. You know, their back three is really good, obviously, but I don't know. It just proves what a coach can do in terms of just getting individuals to work and improving them as players. They've got
it proves 18, what investment can do also.
18 you know, points out of 18.
Yeah, exactly. And that, you know, no one's going to complain about the wage that Conte's on. Everyone would complain if we signed Allegri for $10 million a season.
Yeah.
But the reality is if you get results, it doesn't matter what you paid. It's now worth it. And Conte's proving that right now. His players are proving that. I mean, and that's what makes this season so much worse. So we have our worst start since 1938, and they have their best start, I think, in the club's history. No, they've only two times. This is the second time they've ever started where they won the first six games. Ironically, yeah. the first time they ended up losing the title to Juventus still, so hopefully that continues. But,
yeah.
I mean, that's literally polar opposites. They're tied for their best. We're tied for our worst.
Mm-hmm.
It's like pouring tequila in an open wound. It fucking hot. It sucks. I can't even talk. I'm just frustrated.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's about time to splash money on a good manager, because for so long I feel like we've been taking the cheap way out, waiting for our chance to get one. And this summer was our chance, and we went the cheap way, and it's showing.
And I truly believe we were in for Conte. Remember, he showed up to a couple Milan games and was caught shaking his head multiple times on camera.
Yeah, that was great. What I don't get from all this, I mean, you think about, I guess the argument with someone like Allegri, who is, for me, the best available coach who we could go out and get. That's my opinion. You know, you might say, I don't know, you might say Mourinho, you might say Wenger, whatever. But for me, Allegri's the best available coach that we could potentially go out there and get. So he's wanting $10 million a season. First of all, you don't open up with that offer. You know, as AJ said, I think you open up with something like seven mil a season and say you're going to get quite a big upfront bonus if we get the Champions League, because we can use the Champions League money to pay that, and you get a lot of it. So, but what I don't understand is, if he's too expensive, what is it with Di Marzio, who he came out and said that Milan had money left over in the summer for one more big purchase that we didn't end up getting. He said it was Mery Demiral. He said that we put money aside to sign him. So that would have been 30, 35 mil, but Juve didn't want to sell, understandable, you know, whatever. But that money's there. So 10 mil.
Plus wages, whatever he would have been on wages. So you're looking at over 40 mil.
But 8 mil a season, you give Allegri a four-year deal, that comes to 32 million. So that's like the same as what we would have been prepared to pay for a defender. And a coach makes all the difference. That's what Inter have realised, is they've gone out and paid, you know, by far and away the highest wages of a manager in Serie A. But look what it's got them. I don't understand. We cannot keep using this cheap route now and taking gambles on coaches. And, you know, we've seen the links with, obviously there's been the links with sort of short-term caretaker managers like Ranieri, Donadoni. That's just a no, because all they're going to do is see you through to the end of the season when we have the same dilemma next summer of who to go out and try and get. We missed our big chance this summer. We should have got one of Conte or Sarri. We didn't manage to do that. and we ended up getting the worst out of the three, obviously, in Gianpaolo. So again, that's, you know, more fool us, I suppose. But with Allegri available, you have to find the money from somewhere to go and get him, because an opportunity like this doesn't come around that often. If Allegri genuinely doesn't want it because he doesn't think that he can turn his team around, that's fair enough. You know, you start looking at other options then. But I don't know, you look at someone like Shevchenko, who's been mentioned as a possible link as well, and you go back to that club legend thing, and I totally agree with it. We've tried it enough times now, and I won't say that Seedorf or Inzaghi's or Gattuso's name have been tarnished as such. I think the fans acknowledge that they were thrust into really difficult circumstances. And actually, that season that we had under Inzaghi, we played some half-decent football.
We like started that season in like one of our best forms ever. I mean, I think we were first after like the fourth match week.
Yeah, we were. And Honda scored like 5 goals in the first 3 games of the season, and it was quite an entertaining season. I mean, yeah, there was a lot of embarrassing results in there and stuff like that, but and then you, obviously Gattuso, who got us 1 point off the, you know, the top 4 last season. But yeah, you look at someone like Shevchenko, he is doing, I understand the people that say that he doesn't have pedigree. That is correct. He hasn't coached a club side before, but he is doing good things with the Ukrainian national team. We'll admit that. Mm-hmm. He's won something like 16 out of 28 games, which is pretty good. But he's not going to want to come because he's going to want to qualify for the European Championships with Ukraine and probably guide them through that tournament. And also, again, you run the risk, like you say, of thrusting someone into a situation where they can't possibly succeed, and we just look like idiots at the end of it. So basically, the only option for me is go out and pay the money, bring Allegri back, and he will turn us in the right direction. Because you're talking there about such an esteemed coach, somebody who was the last person to win the league with this club, and he did it with a squad that, in my opinion, wasn't even that great. And we started to see that unfurl a little bit in the season after. But ultimately, you know, you're talking about a manager who goes into a dressing room and will instantly command respect, because this is a guy who's won 5 Serie A titles in a row. You know, he's taken Juve to the Champions League final in his time. And that's what we need. We need a figure now who's going to come in and galvanise what is a pretty, like I say, psychologically broken locker room. And if you have to pay big money to do it, it needs to be available from somewhere. I mean, the talk obviously is about Elliott management wanting to get the club back into the Champions League, sort out the stadium issue to make us a more attractive prospect, and then sell us as soon as the first reasonable offer comes in. Well, I'm afraid that us sitting in 16th place after 6 games isn't really going to, you know, cut it to that extent. So what do you do? Well, you probably make that little bit extra investment, and they've pumped a lot of money in already, don't get me wrong. They won't want to do this. But like I say, if it's 8 million a year over 3 or 4 years, you pump in that extra 20, 30 million, get yourself a really good world-class coach, and you will start to see the results. It's as simple as that.
I looked at a transfer market today, actually. You know, Elliott's big thing was they want to flip the value and sell the club for 1.5 billion. Well, right now we're sitting at a valuation of 511 million euros. We've gone down since they took over. That's the opposite of what they should be doing. And it's because, you know, like you said, they have splashed a decent amount of cash, but doing it in the wrong places, signing backup players, you know, coaches that we don't need, just all kinds of things that aren't going to do it. And I've been saying this for at least 3 seasons worth of podcasts, you know, that the quickest way to success is to sign some big name players at your core, a big striker, a big midfielder, a big defender, and a big coach. And the rest will come after that. You know, you sign these big names, other players want to be there and play with them. You sign a big coach, players want to play under a coach, things like that. No one says, wow, Marco Gianpaolo, that's the guy I want to be under. Even Torreira, his star gem, couldn't get back to us from Arsenal for 45 million. I mean, come on, if we're supposedly going to be trying to take us to the next level, if we want to be contenders at any time in the near future, 45 million should not be turning us away from a player, especially
a player where everything, all of the circumstances were favorable for us. You know, it sounded like he was homesick. He's obviously Uruguayan, but he missed playing in Italy, said that playing under Gianpaolo again would be great. You know, his agent said some complimentary stuff about Milan, and then nothing the flame just died. Nothing came of it. One thing I will say about Torreira, though, is it looks like we kind of dodged a bullet because he's not been great this season. But
he also hasn't been playing a lot, though. Has he?
Yeah, I don't know what the stats are, actually, for how much he... I know that he plays alongside Xhaka, which is obviously... It's not going to help anybody, is it? But I watched him tonight against Man United, and he had, like, the least touches of any player, including the goalkeepers in the first half, did Torreira.
Oh, wow.
So I just don't
know. But sometimes, in my opinion, a midfielder, especially one that's supposed to command the midfield, you could do a lot on the pitch without actually touching the ball, in my opinion, as far as commanding goes. But it's still not a good sight.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I agree with you on that. So basically, Torreira has made six appearances so far this season. He's only started two games. He was hauled off after 55 minutes tonight. So there you go, maybe 45 million for a player like that. It might not have ended so well. But yeah, back to your point, AJ, I totally agree with you. I mean, if you're going to invest and you're going to sort of build a strong core to get a team back to where they were, you have to do exactly that. We talked during the Mercato, and we talked when Gianpaolo was first hired about if the club are going to have this vision of signing young players that are going to fit this system, you know, developing them, but finding the best young talent, you know, in order to do so, then fair enough, they have to stick with that. And we should support it until it gives us a reason for us not to support it. Well, I'm afraid we're currently at that point already. So, I don't know. It all feels a bit negative at the moment. I don't know. There is no quick fix in this, you know.
No, there
isn't. I'm not worried now about us finishing fifth or sixth and outside top four again. I'm worried about us finishing 10th to 12th now.
As long as we get a new manager in, I think that we're going to finish up there. But I don't think anything positive will come of Gianpaolo finishing out the season. And I'm normally all for managers getting a full season under their belt, but there is something very clear going on. There's a huge disconnect between him and the players, and the players look confused out there and uncertain, and it's probably because Gianpaolo is uncertain of himself being able to coach a club of this magnitude.
Yeah, it's an internal crisis, I think, for Gianpaolo that's reflected itself onto the rest of the club. I just find it weird as well, the contrasting comments, sort of Boban coming out and saying, you know, the result against Torino wasn't good. The result in the derby wasn't good. A bit of patience is needed, but we need to start seeing improvements soon. And then Maldini coming out after the Fiorentina game and saying, nope, we're sticking with the coach. You know, he was our choice. And then there's all sorts of reports about a internal conflict between Boban and Maldini over, you know, what should happen with Gianpaolo. It's just all, lot of it is paper talk, don't get me wrong. I understand that, but at the same time, I don't know. There's a point, like the comments are, you know, Boban's staying quiet on everything while Maldini's coming out and kind of blindly defending the coach who so far has given him nothing to defend.
In Maldini's defense, what's he going to do? Come out and say, we're going to sack him in the morning?
I think there's a way to come out and be honest and reflect on what's happened so far, because he needs to stay on the side of the fans. I mean, we tweeted the article with Maldini's quotes early this morning, and some of the replies were certainly not very complimentary to Maldini, saying, look, if you're that blind, then you're part of the problem. I understand he has to come out and back him because it was apparently his choice. At the same time, you have to have an element of realism and say, look, the performances haven't been good and we need to see improvements. And, you know, that's probably going to light a rocket. But I don't know. I mean, personally, just as a nice segue into the Genoa preview, I think he has to win this game or that's it. He's finished.
It can't just be a 1-0 win like our past two wins from what seems like ages ago. It needs to be a commanding victory. We need to score goals, and we need to look like we are playing as a team, because if it is like any of the previous six performances, he will not be back after the international break. And the international break seems to be coming at the right time, because get him out on Sunday, bring in Allegri on Monday, give him 2 weeks, and then, you know, even if Allegri's just here for this, for the season, to caretake us because he wants to go somewhere else, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's, I don't know.
I
like
the
idea. I like the idea, but I don't think he's the kind of coach who would do that. He's not right. In Italy, they talked about Gattuso being a ferryman, the guy who just kind of guides the ship onto the next guy. But I don't think Allegri is that guy. He knows he can get a big contract somewhere and get a nice guaranteed income. And this is going to be an interesting game because Genoa are in as much of a crisis as we are.
Yeah, they are.
They've been shit for years. Like, let's be honest, they've been really poor for years. They're currently sat on 5 points, so they're in the relegation zone. Sampdoria are bottom. I didn't even realise that. They've lost 5 out of 6, but Genoa have lost 3 out of 6. And yeah, they're talking about sacking their manager, Andrea Zoli, if they lose this game. So this is going to be an interesting one because it's the battle of the two teams that are, you know, doing really shit, basically. But that, in a way, I'm annoyed that we've got this kind of game because I think it could be one of those games where we go and win 2-0 or 3-1 or something like that. But that would be more because we're taking advantage of a team that's in as big a mess as us. I would rather we had a decent test like a Sassuolo away or a Parma away or something like that so we could see what this team's really made of rather than going to another team that's really, really low on confidence. But I don't see us winning this game comfortably and I therefore don't see Gianpaolo keeping his job beyond the weekend.
Yeah, I think this can be a scrappy win.
Yeah, I think you're both spot on with that. You know, we go to Genoa and easily can pull off a win. And if we make it look like cohesive, you're right. It's going to save Gianpaolo for another 6 weeks at least. You know, it's going to give him amount of time that isn't deserved. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to continue with this mess. And I think it would hurt us in the long run. So obviously no one wants a loss. I'd rather we get a scrappy win and the management still says, yeah, this isn't working. And we get rid of him. I think that's best case scenario. But you're right. If we were to go to a test like a Parma or a Sassuolo, like you mentioned, that would be the best way to see, like, okay, you're rock bottom. Let's see if you could turn it around and show us what you got. We don't expect you to be competing against Juve in, you know, in a week, but this is a team that's beatable, but it is still a solid test. Can you turn this around? And that's what we need to find out.
Yeah, I think as well. Sorry, I'm just looking at Genoa's team. I don't have any idea who most of these players are, which is a bit of a worry. I think as well, with this game, it strikes me as one where if the players know that it's a last chance saloon for Gianpaolo, they're probably going to go out and play with a bit more freedom. As in like, well, I can make runs forward and, you know, I don't know how to best describe what I'm trying to say here. But yeah, basically just play with more freedom because they think I'm not going to get bollocked by this coach because if we lose, he's not going to be here anyway. Perhaps that's the wrong attitude to take, but I don't know. It just feels like a kind of free shot for everybody involved. But I agree with, you know, what Maddie said. I can see it being a bit of a scrappy win, really, if we do it. I mean, Genoa are one of those teams that we have a half-decent record against. We've won there the last two times we've been, and they haven't scored. So fingers crossed that, as you say, we can get 3 points. Which
What do you think our lineup's going to look like? I mean, there's no way Piontek starts this game, right? I mean, Leao has to be played down the middle. We saw him score one of the most incredible goals in a long time yesterday, or whenever mm-hmm. this fucking game was. Feels like yesterday. I can't get over it. It was, yeah.
It was yesterday.
Okay, Jesus Christ. But we saw Leao fucking pull that incredible stuff off. We need to see that more. Clearly down the middle is where he plays best because he's not creating on the side when like that. You know, when he was in the middle, that's when he looked incredible. So do we put Paqueta on the left wing? Do we put Bonaventura, Calhanoglu? I mean, is Paqueta even fit enough to play again? I don't know. But surely we don't see Piontek start. Last time we benched him, Andre Silva started, we won, but Piontek came on and scored in that game, right? Was that the one he got his first penalty in?
I can't remember.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. But I still think we need to do it, you know, light that fire. And even if we move forward with Liao, Piontek gave us an incredible season last season. We mentioned it all summer long. What if Piontek's a one season wonder? Well, what if? You know, we're in season two now. We're six games deep, and he doesn't have a single goal from open play. So,
yeah, he has one goal from open play in his last 12 Serie A games, which just isn't good enough for a 35 million euro striker.
No.
I cannot believe that bullshit that came from Spain earlier today about Barcelona eyeing him as a replacement for Luis Suarez. I think a 70-year-old Luis Suarez would probably be more useful in the box than Piontek at the moment. But
Suarez today over Piontek today. Honestly.
Yeah. Oh yeah, obviously. I still think he's one of the best number nines in the world. And that season that he had, even though it was for Liverpool, you know, seeing a player like that in absolute peak form just does amazing damage. Like, but yeah, I really don't want to bash players on a personal level and say just get rid of them ASAP, but I'm finding nothing defensible about Piontek anymore. He doesn't even really look like he's trying.
No,
and that's difficult because I saw a video earlier and I can't remember who tweeted it, but I will quickly find out. It was at Saturnian 96, and it was the video of the Coppa game against Napoli, you know, when we won 2-0. And
yeah, that long pass over the top. Goals.
Yeah. And just watching that and watching the confidence with which he literally splits their back line, which isn't a back line, which isn't a bad back four, sorry, in half, finishes both goals so, so well. I'm just thinking, what the hell has happened to that player?
Who did we play? Calabria threw a cross in and Piontek like hit it, shinned it, and it curled in perfectly into the top right corner.
Oh, that was that Atalanta away?
I think so. I mean, that Piontek was unstoppable.
Rodriguez,
that was like
yeah.
seven goals in six games. Some fucking ridiculous shit. Like, that Piontek was otherworldly. He was incredible. That was so much fun to watch. But then he took the number nine, and there's a curse. And curses are real now, apparently. So that's the end of that. You know, you mentioned that Don Balan article, though, where he was going for $50 million to Barca. Kind of funny. FIFA 20 came out the other day. I was playing it. And Valencia offered me $75 million for Piontek, so I sold him real quick. That was just, just funny. Thought of that.
I'm not surprised about that.
Would never happen in real life, but
no. Maddie, go on. What would your start? What changes would you make? What would your 11 be for the game against Genoa? And then I'll come in with my ridiculous, controversial take.
I'm gonna do a 4-3-3 again with Liao, Rebic, and Suso. Unfortunately, Suso, because I don't know who else is going to start there. I don't think we want to play Casillejo. Midfield of Benacer in the middle, Paqueta, and Kessier. And backline of Calabria, Romagnoli, Duarte, and Hernandez.
Oh, fuck. I forgot Moussakio's got a red card.
Yeah, I also... That did kind of slip my mind as well for a second there. That was a stupid tackle, by the way. That
was so dumb. And honestly, we're lucky Benacer didn't get a red also because of his two penalty giveaways.
Yeah. I think that probably should have been a red. Well, obviously two yellows, but...
Real quick, Maddie, when in your lineup, were you having Liao on the left wing and Rybic at striker or the other way around? Okay. I would do the exact same, but I would have Rybic left wing and Liao centered.
I guess that would probably make more sense, yeah.
It would represent a more fluid front three, though, where, you know, if Liao was getting more joy out wide, you could put Rybic up front for a bit, but I don't know how he would do as an out-and-out centre forward. But, yeah, I think the back four for this game kind of picks itself. Hernandez and Calabria will be the fullbacks, although I must say I was disappointed with Teo Hernandez against Fiorentina, but I mean, who weren't
the
we disappointed
team
by? I know.
Except for Liao, he had an amazing goal.
Liao and Donnarumma, I mean, it should have been four if it weren't for that penalty save.
You know, that's the most frustrating part, too, is during Donnarumma's the second penalty when he saved it, I didn't even crack a smile. I mean, I was still pissy. I didn't even smile for Liao's goal because the game was just so far fucking gone that the only good moments couldn't even bring joy to me. It was I don't know. I'm still pissy.
Dude, I changed it to the Lions game. The Milan game on my phone, like glancing down every once in a while. I didn't even know it was a Liverpool jersey.
I was just tired of losing.
I was so pissed off. And then the Lions lost in the last
Lost in the last minute as well. I text you saying, "Oh, the Lions are actually good this year," and you just went, "No, they're not," because they couldn't find a way to F this up, and that is exactly what happened. So I got the same back four as you two. Obviously, Duarte coming in for Musacho because we literally don't have another fit centre back apart from Matteo Gabbia, and you're not going to thrust him in there, are you? But this is where I think Giampaolo, since he's already been willing to throw his principles to one side already this season, do it again and field an 11 that is going to give you the best chance of scoring goals and winning this game, because you literally have nothing to lose at this point other than your job. So you go hell for leather and you try and win this game comfortably to give yourself more time. So this is where I'm going with a 4-2-3-1. And I know AJ is going to interject at one point about my midfield. Yeah, I know. But I mean, it could have progressed more, so I'm going to throw it out there again. I would have Bennacer and Kessier as, I mean, you caught a double pivot. I don't like the phrase double pivot because they don't have to function in identical styles. I feel like the best 4-2-3-1 formations almost have a more combative midfielder, and they have a player who's more of a deep lying playmaker who sort of, you know, sits in alongside them and can be that box-to-box player who moves up and contributes to attacks. So this is where you sort of have Bernacer as the one who sat slightly deeper, but ultimately you've got two midfielders there that aren't frightened of a challenge, that are going to cover a lot of ground and do it quickly. You know, the energy and the intensity that they provide should cause a lot of problems for the opposition, and it would be good for our pressing game, in my opinion. But then you've got Kessier, who we know he's not great going forward, or rather his decision-making isn't great, but actually his goal-scoring stats are quite, well, they're all right. But he is the sort of player that, you know, if we're transitioning into an attack, could push forward that bit more and help with the retention of the ball. So I'd have him sitting in alongside Bennacer, but just slightly further forward. And then I'd have Suso on the right, purely because, as Maddie says, there's no real alternative. Yeah. My hope would be in that you're putting one more player in the final third than you would with a 4-3-1-2 or a 4-3-3.
What about starting Rebic there, Leal up top, and Paqueta on the left side?
And then who are you playing as an attacking midfielder? Bonaventura?
Oh, what formation are you doing?
4-2-3-1.
Oh, I missed that part. My bad.
Yeah, sure. How much you care about?
I'm reading the listener questions, man. I'm preparing myself for the next part.
Yeah, all right. Fair play. Yeah, that's a good excuse. So, yeah, I got Suso on the right because, like I say, I think you'd have a support runner in the attacking midfielder. So you've got more bodies to aim at in the box, and also playing him out right, more natural for him, seems to perform better out there. He's going to hit a little bit. He always hits a purple patch of form in a season. Just got to hope that it comes sooner rather than later. I'd have Paqueta in behind as the number 10. And then I'd have Rebic out on the left side, either as, I guess you call, left winger or as a left attacking midfielder. And I'd have the ability for Paqueta and Rebic to swap during games, you know, and offer something a little bit different, a bit of variety. I think, you know, those three in behind Rafael Leao, it's time to drop Krzysztof Piątek because he's just not pulling his weight, quite frankly. It is like playing with 10 men at the moment. And, you know, I think what we've seen is that he has impact when he comes off the bench more so at the moment, as we saw against Brescia when we started Andreas Silva up front. Piątek came over the last 20 minutes and looked very, very lively and could have had a couple of goals. We need that. We need the Piątek who's not complacent and knows that he's got a point to prove. So I'm playing Leao up front. I think his runs, certainly, you know, if he's willing to drift wide and bring the other three players behind him into the game, could cause some serious problems. But also, he's going to make those runs in behind. And with creative players in abundance behind him, going to be able to feed him every now and again. And he's got that individual brilliance as well that we saw in that goal against Fiorentina. So I don't know. I just think 4-2-3-1, surprised it's not really been considered yet. I've seen a few people mention it. I guess the problem, and I understand why AJ is about to object to it, but you could say that the two holding midfielders might not work well together, but I think you've just got to front load it with attacking options and try and win this game 3-0. Otherwise, he knows he's getting sacked.
You know, I'm not 100% objecting it. Because that honestly is my favorite formation, the 4-2-3-1. I've always been a fan of it. I think that's I don't want to say modern because like no team uses it, but I think it's a very unique formation that can serve a lot of purposes and fills a lot of holes. And it gives players the ability to drop back or move forward. And there's a lot of positives to it. I just don't like Kessié when he's forward. He likes to shoot a lot and he's really poor at it. I don't mind him getting up there so long as Gianpaolo says, we're going to stab you every time you take a shot. Like, just pass the fucking ball. I don't know what we got to do to convince him. Maybe put a shot collar on him. Like, I don't know what the fix is. But yeah, just keep him from shooting and he'll be a great player, one of the best mids out there. But because we know we can't do that because he just refuses, if there's a way to keep him from getting in the final third, I think Suso is a fantastic player, but he doesn't have the I don't know what the right word is, but when other players interject in his area, instead of just saying, hey, get the fuck out, this is my spot, he says, oh, okay, I'll just move in. And then he can't play anywhere but on the right. So we do that, and now we've fucked off two entire positions. So I hate that, but if we could keep Kessié from going into the final third, if I don't care if he moves forward and back because he is a box-to-box, it could work that way. But mm-hmm. I don't know. I would honestly, if we're going to play a 4-2-3-1, I would do Bennacer and Biglia. And I know people are going to shit on me for that, but at least Biglia knows that position and can play it right. And I get your philosophy, Ollie, and I agree with it. I just don't think we have the players to execute that. Personally,
that
I would rather us just do
it. It's not such a bad thing, actually.
Say that again?
Bennacer and Biglia would not be so bad.
No, I actually never even thought about that. That would work because when I was talking about having a more energetic, more combative midfielder and someone who's more of a deep lying playmaker, I mean, if that's what it takes to get the best out of Biglia, giving him that bit more time on the ball and somebody alongside him to sort of bring him out of his shell a bit more, because we haven't seen him really play well for us full stop, then that might be a solution going forward.
Yeah, I mean, we know Biglia likes to pass back to the defense and we all hate it. But if we're doing, you know, like you said, you hate the double pivot term, but if we are playing a double pivot, it makes sense to have one player do that. You know, that's his job as a defensive midfielder. And if Bennacer could still do those pinpoint laser passes forward cutting lines, then we're good. And I don't have a problem with that. Personally, I would like us to see a 4-3-3 with an attacking midfielder instead of a defensive one. I think that's the ultimate formation right now. You know, if you have a strong box-to-box, a strong center mid, and then an attacking mid, I think you cover all bases there. And I personally believe we have the players to do that. If we do, like, Paqueta attacking mid, Kessié on the right, and Bonaventura on the left center mid, I think that's solid enough, honestly. But none of these formations are going to get utilized. It's going to be exactly what Matty said, and it's probably going to have players out of position for some reason. That's what Gianpaolo's been doing.
What do you think about, I mean, I guess what we've seen so far this season is that the teams that have dominated us have done so by playing three at the back and packing the midfield. Do you reckon that's something we could pull off, or do we just not have the wing-backs for it?
I don't think we have the wing-backs. I mean, Teo could do it for sure, and I think Calabria could adapt, but I think it would take him a bit more time.
Conte, though, that's his natural position.
You're right. That you're right, actually. Yeah, and Conte didn't look god-awful when he played the other day in the Derby, but he wasn't good. But
he
then
looked
again,
like
it was...
Busy idiot.
Yeah, but it also was a sixth start in two years, and it was against fucking Inter, the best Inter side in the last decade. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not against it. So if we were to do that, what would our back three be? Because right now we only have two center mids or center backs, so we couldn't pull it up next week.
We certainly couldn't do it against Genoa, but let's say international break, you've got a bit of time to work on it. I guess, ideally, when everyone's fully fit, you're looking at Romagnoli, Caldara, Duarte, For the time being, it'd be Romagnoli, Duarte, Musacchio. Who knows? Maybe throw Gabbia in there. I mean, he's.
You would say Duarte over Musacchio?
Yeah, I would. I've not had another. I mean, I've seen some people praising Duarte for his performance from what we saw in the Fiorentina game. Obviously, he came into an absolute shit show. But he ran around a lot, which is good because it's nice to see someone showing a bit of passion and a bit of fight. But it didn't reflect well on our organisation at the back. And I don't think it's a coincidence we conceded twice more after he came on. But there's a player in there and we know exactly what he's all about. You know, he, as you say, just shows hustle, like ridiculous hustle. He's quick and, you know, he won't shy away from a tackle. He's good in the air. Statistics show. So who knows, maybe give him a bit of time to. He's going to get a game on Saturday, so let's see what we see from him.
Does. Yeah, I would like to see a three at the back with Romagnoli, Caldara, and then I don't have a problem with Duarte or Musacchio. I think Duarte would make more sense at a back three because you're right, he does hustle, he's faster, and the second Musacchio is on the back foot, he gets beat every time. That's when he makes his mistakes. So, yeah, and then I guess Conte would be our right wing back, Teo, and then Bonaventura.
I'll play Benacer. Benacer like the base, and you'd have Kessie and Bonaventura. Or the only problem there is that with that formation is that you've essentially got a few players that we've signed that aren't particularly useful unless you want to sort of play Liao and Rebic up top and just hope for the best with that. Or, you know, you play.
I would put Liao and Rebic up top. Honestly, Liao and Piontek in a top two is not bad. I just think Liao is better served center than out wide. So that's the only reason I don't think it's been working in the 4-3-3.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking about a 3-4-1-2 as well, which is what we've seen into play, or 3-4-2-1, but I don't know if we could get away with that because we don't have the same midfield quality that they do.
Yeah.
But yeah, interesting thoughts. Thank God we're not football managers because we'd probably be doing a worse job than Marco at the moment. But yeah. Right, let's go with predictions then. I'll kick off. I think we're going to win this one 2-1. Don't know why. I don't really care who scores either, to be honest. I see it being a narrow sort of just squeak by victory, but I still think that it won't be enough to save Gianpaolo's job.
You think it will or won't be enough to save
won't
it?
Won't be enough.
Well, yeah. I think Liao's going to start, and I think we win. He's going to get a goal, and it's going to be a clean sheet, a 1-0, but it's not going to be a pretty performance, and hopefully Gianpaolo is still gone.
Matty?
I'm going to say 3-1, we win. A great performance, Gianpaolo's still gone.
You know, you have said 3-1 win every podcast this season. Are you just waiting for one?
I'm just waiting for one.
Last week, you said the floodgates are open, the goals are going to come flooding in, and they sure did, but they were on us, not for us.
So this will be Maddie's last podcast with us, but we thank him for his contribution. listener question time. Here we go. So I haven't got the tweet up, which is bad preparation on my part. Okay.
Maddie's been reading for an hour.
Christian Espinosa, loyal listener, at Purple Buckets. This is a good question. Is there another big club anywhere that are in a worse rut than we are in? Even Man United are closer than us getting back to greatness. AJ, I'll let you answer that first.
To my knowledge, no. I think right now we are the least desirable job in football.
Yeah. Maddie?
I would have to agree. Although, I don't know.
I'm just cracking my brains. I mean, there's obviously been those teams that are historically good and have found themselves in, like, really, really bad positions. It's a bit niche, but, like, you think of Monaco and...
Or Fenerbahce last year in Turkey.
They were
in the relegation. And they ended up finishing in the top 10, but still, you know, like...
I just feel like the pressure and the expectation is not the same at these kind of teams. I mean, I'm not saying that Turkish fans aren't passionate because they really are. But you look at like a Monaco, I don't really know if the expectation is for them to compete every year. Whereas with us, with the trophy cabinet that we have and stuff, it's about getting back there, not about getting right. back into the Champions League. It's about getting back to a position where we can win the Champions League. So, do I think there's a couple? No, I don't think there is. I don't think there is, because the difficulty that we're going to have in comparison with Man United is that Man United are a club that still make a ridiculous amount of revenue and can still afford to go out and pay 75 million for a centre back who, yeah, he's not exactly transformed them so far, but when's the next time that we're going to go and splash over 50 million on a player? I just don't see it happening under the current ownership. It would need investment from obviously rich owners, be they Qatari, Saudi, or you know, anybody else. But ultimately, we're working under financial fair play parameters, which makes our supposed climb up the mountain to the top again even harder. So I don't think there's a less attractive job in world football at the moment, which now makes me feel like there's absolutely no way that any half decent coach like Allegri is going to accept the job either. But
yeah, when a club approaches you and say, "Hey, we're in 16th place. Do you want to take over?" Usually, the expectation is try your best to make top 10. Our expectation is improve 14 spots and let's get Champions League. It's not going to fucking happen. No one wants to do that.
To be fair,
not mid season.
To be fair, right now we're only 5 points out of top 4.
We're also 1 point above relegation.
Yeah, right. Let's.
So
we're looking over our shoulders rather than, you know, it's scary. I mean, we're not going to go down. Like, let's stop that.
Yeah,
that's famous last words, isn't it? But
yeah, what
no,
the
we're
hell?
Not. We're not going to go down. Like I say, my worry is not about us finishing fifth or sixth and just missing out on the top 4 again. It's more like finishing somewhere like 8th to 10th or
but
whatever.
To Batty's point. Given how close we are to being able to get in the top part, this would be the time to make that managerial change. The longer we wait, the harder it is to get back to that.
Five points is two good games. You know, yeah. I think two good games and
hoping a lot of teams falter.
If you look at Roma and Lazio, who are kind of the ones that we're talking about, I mean, Atalanta, to be fair to them, have won 4 out of 6, and they're proving me wrong because I said they wouldn't be able to match what they did last season. I still don't think they will. I think the Champions
League...
I think that will weigh on them. Roma and Lazio have both only won 3 out of... I say only. I mean, they've won one more game than us, basically, in their first 6, but obviously haven't lost 4.
That's a lot of points.
So. But 5 points is, as I say, two good games away. Or, you know, maybe you look at it over a 5-game stretch, and we have 5 games that we need to target, you know, for points. And Lazio, I believe, are the 5th game at home. We need to be looking to be in a position to jump over them by that game. Simple as that. And it doesn't sound too unachievable when you think about it like that. And yeah, so I would agree with what AJ says. Now is the time, if you're going to make the big change, to do so. But yeah, to the original question, I'm not really sure that there's many clubs that are in a worse rut than we are at the moment, but just got to hope that we manage to sort of claw ourselves out the hole, really. Joseph Calvo 13, another guy who always asks good questions. After these defeats, are you anticipating Bilia will be back in the starting lineup and one of Sousa or Piontek will be dropped?
Well, we kind of touched on it. I do think Piontek's going to get dropped. I mentioned a way I think Biglia could come back into the lineup, but I don't think he's going to start over Bennacer. Maybe this week, just simply because of how bad Bennacer did. But Bennacer's only had, you know, 1-2 games, maybe 3. I'm not sure, but I don't think Biglia's coming back. Not next week.
I agree.
I don't know. I'm worried because Bennacer was not good in that game,
but no one was good.
Yeah, but he was particularly. I mean, if there were sort of some doubts as to why Bennacer wasn't starting a few of the earlier games, I think it didn't really do much to kind of prove otherwise. But we've seen bright spots from Bennacer without a doubt, and there's been periods in games where he's looked like an absolute huge upgrade on Bilia. But for some reason, I just feel like Gianpaolo has this fascination with playing Bilia because of whatever his experience or the different characteristics that he offers or the maturity, or I don't know. But I'm a bit worried about the idea of him coming back in. Because he'd also have the excuse of saying, oh, well, Bennacer needed a rest or whatever, because we're playing two games in... No, we're not. Never mind. Ignore that bit. But yeah, I don't know. I'm a little bit worried about that. I do think Piontek will be dropped. I don't think Suso will be dropped. But we don't know. That's the point. Like, we don't, at this point, six games into the season, know what our formation is, and we don't know what our ideal starting 11 is. So, you know, that should be a massively worrying sign for us. Anyway, Carlos Rocha asks, do you think firing Gianpaolo and looking for someone like Allegri, for example, will solve our issues? I honestly think that changing coach yet again is going to be more harmful than good.
I think it is the exact opposite. I think it'll be more good than harmful, but I don't think it's going to just magically fix all the issues. I mean, that would be naive to believe. I think it will improve us, and I don't know if it would help us achieve the goal we're looking for, but I do think it would be a step in the right direction.
Maddie?
I understand his thought process, Carlos's thought process behind that question, because changing coaches is never like really a good thing to do, only because in the middle of the season, it's just like a whole whirlwind for the players to completely start playing a different system. But I do think in the situation that we are in, it is smart.
Yeah, I don't think you can ignore a start as bad as this. And as I say, if we started to see gradual progress and we started to see signs of optimism, then you could perhaps make the argument that changing coach again based on results would be a bad move. You know, we've said on this podcast many times, the thing that the club needs is stability and is to give the right man the time that he needs. But ultimately, I think the vast majority are in agreement that Gianpaolo doesn't appear to be the right man. And in the meantime, as we've said, it's damaging the mentality of the squad and it makes it an even bigger hole to try and get out of. At BJ underscore NNESS asks, how important do you think Liao will be in the future for our project?
Very important.
Yeah, he's definitely the best signing we've made in a couple seasons. I was a big fan of him when he was at Lille, and I was stoked when we got him, and he continues to look great. He scored that incredible individual goal, and yeah, I think playing him in the middle is going to be the way to go in the future.
Yeah, he does look very good. He looks like exactly the talent we thought we were getting. Good movement. You know, he's quick. He doesn't mind holding the ball up. He doesn't mind running in behind. I mean, that goal that he scored against Fiorentina was great. If that had been a goal to make it 2-1 to us, I'd be watching that at least 15 times a day. But obviously, not the best memory from the game as a whole.
Could edit that clip and just remove the scoreboard from there? Mm. That would be great. And send it to me. That'd be cool. I'd like that. Thanks, guys.
A little
homework for the listeners.
I mean, everybody's jumping on the Liao hype train, and I understand it. But one thing I will say is he massively frustrated me against against Torino. I think if you watch the areas that he picked the ball up in, yes, he drove forward a lot, but a lot of times his first touch wasn't really there. He seemed to do this thing where he like scuffed the ball into the ground, and then it was like bobbling, so he couldn't really dribble with it the way that he wanted to. But he did have that header really, really well saved from Sirigu, and honestly, the rest of the team sort of faded to the extent that he ended up once again looking like the most dynamic and the most creative player. But against Fiorentina, he was head and shoulders above the rest of the team. So for that reason, I think any concerns about him being young and immature are completely unfounded when he's the only one who, as I say, looked like he gave a shit at certain points on Sunday night. So I think he's going to be massively important for us. And I hope, as AJ says, to see him start up the middle because he could offer us something that we're not currently getting. At Marty Tech asks, discuss the stubbornness of Gianpaolo and his tactics in terms of making formation adjustments other than switching players out. So this is an interesting one because obviously we've talked about the idea of maybe switching formations or maybe making tweaks to the lineup. But do you think there's something to be said for basically just saying, no, right, go back to your 4-3-1-2 and just pick the right players for it? Because that isn't something that he's actually really done yet.
No, right. He's given everyone rest, I'm doing air quote here, but time to adapt, by starting Billy over Benacer by not having Paquette in the middle, by forcing Suso into a position he's unfamiliar with. You know, if he picks the right people, there's going to be fans annoyed because you might not see Suso in the lineup. And that's not to say Suso's a bad player. I think he is still our best player, but he's not an attacking mid. I think we've seen enough of that to know that he's not. And if we're going to stick with the 4-3-1-2 like Chimpalo wants and can do, then we need to have Liao Piontek up top or Rivich Liao up top with Paqueta down the middle as the attacking mid, and Benacer in the center with either Bonaventura on the left and Kessié on the right, or Hakan or someone in there, you know. But he hasn't been able to do it with his best possible lineup yet, in my opinion. And, you know, obviously Rodriguez has played all those games as well over Teo. So there's a lot that needs to be done that can be done. But I don't know if Chimpalo is going to do it, because as soon as he failed in his first go with the 4-3-1-2 or whatever, he switched to Christmas tree. And we actually had, those were the two games we won. And then we switched out of it. And so yeah. I don't know, maybe go back to that. Maybe we do that, because that gave Suso the freedom to go out wide and do his thing, but still play in the middle. And we could have Paqueta there alternate in the middle. And I think that would give us more free-flowing play. And maybe that's the way to go. I don't know. Yeah, those are the players you got.
Yeah, I usually say the 4-3-2-1 as well is not something that's a huge compromise of his philosophy. I mean, it functions quite similar to a 4-3-1-2 at times. So who knows? Yeah, maybe go back to that. But as I was saying, I just think Gianpaolo has not done a thing yet where he plays his favorite formation exactly how he wants it to be, with a trequartista, with a support striker, and with an out and out centre forward. He hasn't really played that with round pegs in round holes. And if that involves benching Suso for the game against Genoa, then so be it. You know, play Bonaventura in there, or play Paqueta, someone who would be more naturally inclined to play down the middle. And then, you know, play Liao and Piontek if that's the front two that you think is going to work going forward. Just do it. Just show us that you actually believe in what you want it to do. Otherwise, I'm afraid the door's wide open. Someone asks here, this is quite an interesting one, I hadn't thought about it. At CSO, I've probably pronounced that wrong. What do you guys think about Marcelino, the ex-Valencia coach, as a candidate to replace Gianpaolo? Now, I've jumped the gun here and assume that you guys have no idea if he's any good or not.
You are super right.
Yeah, so I've looked up his record. He's managed 318 games in La Liga. He's won 135 of them, drawn 86 and lost 97. Valencia last season, he managed them obviously for 38 games, won 15, drew 16 and lost 7. And they finished fourth, and he's finished fourth in La Liga for the last three seasons. He's only ever coached in Spain, and I feel like there's going to be a period of adaptation that is not really ideal for where we are at the moment. However, I have heard his name mentioned before as kind of a progressive sort of coach, but I don't think he's the right profile. I don't think you sack someone like Gianpaolo to bring in someone like Marcelino. I just don't think that makes an awful lot of sense. It says here that his preferred formation is a 4-4-2. I'd like to see how we'd line up in a 4-4-2.
Well, we saw it a few times under Gattuso.
Yeah, that's true. That would be good, because we'll get to see Samu Castillejo come back as a left mid. So I'm all for that. In answer to the question, it's an interesting profile to put forward and somebody who is currently available, but I don't think he's the right man at the right time for us. And then we've got a couple more questions. At AzizW22 asks, how fucked are we? I think the answer is quite fucked, but not completely fucked yet. And at Ismar Pervan asks, going to ask again, could you discuss why we are so bad? And you're welcome. You've had an hour and 20 minutes of us doing exactly that.
I was going to answer that question this same exact way, just a little bit more.
Yep. Like, oh, we've been doing it.
yeah. So that's it. Any closing thoughts, boys? We've been a bit of a ranty episode, but, you know, we are in a massive crisis, so it makes sense.
I feel like this is a norm for us every season. We are in a crisis at some point. So hopefully this is the crisis, and it ends next weekend.
Yeah, you know what's really fucked up is my dad, he doesn't watch football, you know, our football at all. And a couple years ago, I'm trying to think when it was, like, probably mid-2017, I was riding in the car with him, and it was after a podcast, and he said, you know, I listened to a few of your episodes. Why do you support this team? You never win games. And I thought, wow, insightful, Dad. I agree. Why do we do this? I don't fucking know, but it sucks, and here we are again.
I mean, I know I seem to mention this every episode, but my local team, Huddersfield, haven't won a game on a Saturday for 538 days, I think it is now. Currently second bottom of the Championship, having been relegated from the Premier League. Haven't won a game this season. We've drawn two and lost five, I think it is. And then I also support a team that has scored the least goals from open play of anyone. So football is not being particularly kind to me at the moment, but as the song
Detroit
that I...
Lions have not won a playoff game since the early 90s.
That is obscene. I didn't actually know that. And yep. The Red Wings and the Tigers finished with the worst record in baseball. The Red Wings are not going to be anywhere near the playoffs this year. So Pistons it is then, I guess.
Let's go Pistons.
Yeah. as the D-Ream song goes, I guess things can only get better, can't they? Yeah, that's it for this week. Fingers crossed we're actually talking about a decent performance next week, but in the meantime, thank you for listening. I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. Once again, you can find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher or at Kilpin Chronicle for some more explicit Milan-based rants. Being joined, as per usual, by Anthony Torgrud.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everyone. I hope you guys could hear our frustration and alleviate some of yours by realizing that you're not alone in this. And yeah, follow me on Twitter, Torgrud45. I don't know why I couldn't think of my Twitter name for a while there. But yeah, check me out. Oh, all right. Well,
sorry, man.
People don't even know who you are, Ollie. and we got messing with this also.
Yeah.
It's actually irrelevant.
That is rude. Dude, I get like a couple more followers each week.
Oh, good.
I'm one follower away from 400, guys. So who wants to be that lucky number 400? You can find me at Madison_DT.
Say we're away now. I've just unfollowed you.
You're such a bitch.
I was about to say that. So you're two or three away now.
Yeah, but do follow Madison on Twitter. And yeah, I guess thank you for listening, everybody. Catch you in a week's time.
Abate la rimette dentro. Esce Radu. Porta vuota. Gol! Gol! Abbiamo battuto il gatto nero! Li abbiamo battuti tutti, Alessio! Grande Alessio! È bella la vita! Lava quella zolla, Alessio! Lava la quella zolla, Alessio! Lava!